know what? You know what? He could have rescheduled his daughter's birthday. You know? You know, he probably has power of attorney over her anyway. You know? There he is, Dad. I'd like some help, please. I can't make my computer talk to the projector. Oh, see, you should have... See, you should have walked in the room sooner, Dad. Darn it. You could go sit with Pia if you wanted. We were debating whether or not Keithy has the power to reschedule Sarah's birthday. No. All right, Dad. I've tried xrander-r. Because I'd love a PowerPoint. So, just a quick question. How many of you have ever heard me talk before? Because I have glasses. Fantastic. That means that about half of you won't realize that I've reused stuff. So that's even more fantastic. And I apologize for the rather ambiguous title. The full title of this talk is Through the Looking Glass, Open Source from a Teenage Perspective. Evidently, the entire title didn't make it onto the program. I've had a lot of people come up and ask me, so, are you really talking about open source today? Yes. Fantastic, unless OpenOffice doesn't want to work today. Okay. It's not one of them. Almost exactly not what I wanted. I apologize. I had all of this set up. It was ready to go. So excited. Fantastic. All right. Let's get the show on the road. All right. So yes, this is the full title of my talk, Through the Looking Glass, Open Source from a Teenage Perspective. I am Elizabeth Garby on most days. If this isn't the talk you were looking for, I hope you stay anyway. All right, so here's a little bit about me. About half of you have heard me talk before, so you probably know most of the stuff on the slide, but I'm going to go through it anyway because we have so many first-timers at LCA this year. I just graduated high school in May. I did it in 3 years instead of four. Thank you. Very proud of myself. And rather than go straight on to college, I decided I was going to take a year off, tour the world, go into various conferences on various continents and sleep, do all the things that I probably won't have a chance to do once I put my nose to the grindstone, go back to college in September. My first computer was when I was two. Yes, it was a Windows machine because at that time, all of the edutainment, the educational entertainment games that I wanted to play were only available for Windows, and frankly, I really didn't care when I was 2 years old. I installed my first Debian machine with a significant amount of help at age 9. I'm more of an artist than a programmer. Creativity runs in the family. My mother's a graphic design major and photographer and quilter and all sorts of different things, so I try to incorporate both aspects of that into how I use open source. I'm not even really a super enthusiastic technologist. This is not something I want to study for the rest of my life. Just growing up with computers made me unafraid of them. I do have root on my own machine, but I'm not really a sysadmin. I can write a few lines of code if I need to fix something on my computer and Dad isn't within earshot. But other than that, I leave most of the sysadmin stuff up to the people who are really good at it. I've presented at LCA twice. Presented at Scale, OSCON, the Forum International Software Libre, and twice at the Ohio Linux Fest, and, as of October, I presented at the Japan Linux Symposium. So, this is me. I'm installing RAF, Debian server, so easy that it only took free enter clicks and, Dad, what does partitioning mean? Psh, just ignore it. It took me a grand total of 15 minutes, and it was then that I realized, you know what, I could really do some cool stuff with this thing called open source. It's really not all that difficult. So this is the kind of stuff I do when I'm not working on graphics on the computer. This is pen and ink. The stuff before was Chinese watercolor. This is pen and ink as well. So a little bit about what I'm going to be talking about today. So why, as a teenager, have I chose open source? And how free and open software fits into a teenage lifestyle. So what makes open source appealing to a teenager, from my perspective at least? It's really easy to express yourself as an individual with programs you can change and customize. You're not locked into software that comes out of a box. You really can put on your machine the stuff that you want to use. You can lose the rest of it, and you can work on the programs that you use a lot if you're motivated to do so. It's relatively new in the global history of software, so it fits into the whole, I'm a teenager, I would love to be trendy, and this is an aspect of software that is new enough that it's still really exciting. There's still a lot of really exciting stuff happening in the FOSS space. And it's free. It doesn't cost anything. Yes, you do have to buy some hardware in order to use the software, but the software itself doesn't cost anything, which is a huge plus for a teenager. And then why do I personally care about free software? So yes, Dad runs open source, so of course his daughter does, but it's a whole lot more than that. Programs, applications, and source should not be the sole property of a company. They're way too important for that. Users should also be given the access to the guts of something they use on a regular basis. Imagine being handed a blender and no instruction manual, you've never seen it before, and you have to call someone to help you make a smoothie or to help you fix it. That's not the way my brain works. If I want to use an application, I also want to have the tools to fix it. It promotes an interactive involvement in technology. Again, this is not software that you can just get out of a box and call a number when you need tech support. This is something that requires involvement in a community, and it can require as little or as much involvement as you're willing to put into it. But what's really exciting is it's more than software, it's a community. Constant improvements going on in the open source space. Somebody's always hacking something. And if you find a problem and you have the right skill set, that's always a plus, you can fix it. And if you don't have the right skill set, hop on IRC and find the guy who wrote the program and ask him to fix it. And if you can't find an adequate program for a project, the tools to create one are readily available. And even if you yourself don't feel like this is something that you can accomplish on your own, I'm sure there's somebody else in the open source space who has similar needs to yours, and that promotes even a more interactive involvement in the community. There is the installation time of 15 minutes versus 4 hours. I had to nurse one of my friends through an XP install over a text chat on the phone, and I felt for her because I could install an entire Debian system in 15 minutes, and she was still waiting for the little hourglass to stop moving after 4 hours. And yeah, it was pretty pathetic, quite honestly. And these programs don't have a price tag. So, how does free software fit in to a teenager's lifestyle who lives in the US? Unfortunately, right now it doesn't. I was terrified when I walked into the library at my high school about a year or so ago, and there was this sign on the door. Hooray! Main library computers are now XP. And my heart sank. Because this is the kind of thing that we run to a lot in the United States public school system. There are various misconceptions my peers have about free software. First, it's complicated. Yes, you can't just go to a store that sells software and get open source in a box. It doesn't work that way. So of course, if it's not something you're used to, it's very easy to have the misconception that it's complicated. Another misconception is that we don't have access to similar quality programs as those people who do use proprietary software. Things like Photoshop and Flash and those sorts of big, all-encompassing, one-size-fits-all suites of programs. Yes, we do have equivalent programs that are, I think, just as good, if not better. There is also the misconception that only geeks use it. There's no way you can understand it if you're not a super genius. I don't generally strike people as the geek super genius type, and this is something I use exclusively. That's a huge misconception. There is no standard open source user. We're way too diverse for a label like that. The whole movement, this whole open source movement is an exclusive club. It's like a cult or a cabal or something. That's not true. It is super easy to worm your way into this whole open source experience. It's not exclusive at all. And if you can't program, nothing makes sense. Well, just look at me. I can't program past the shell, and I don't have any problems understanding the programs that I'm using, because frankly, they're not as complicated as a lot of people outside the community think they are, especially in my age group. Unfortunately, my public school system was still completely proprietary. I had to consciously save everything I worked on at home as a Microsoft-compatible file type. That burned me several times when I had an essay or a paper or an article or something of that nature due. And it turns out, yes, I did all the work. Yes, I did put it on my USB key to take to school, but it was an ODF. And no computer in the public school system I was in could even conceive of reading something other than a .doc. Administrators had also, this ticked me off the most. Administrators had also locked the command line and any other programs that allow you to get past the user interface and just talk to the computer. When something went wrong, I literally had to pick myself up and move computers because there was nothing I could do about it. Using Linux actually used to mean expulsion in my school district. The first time I came to LCA when I was 13, my principal wanted me to give a, sorry about that, I'm very expressive with my hand. He wanted me to give a practice run of the talk I was gonna be giving. And we looked at the rules about bringing your own laptop to school, because none of my friends had ever done that before. And it turned out that any Unix-based machine that you brought into school used to mean immediate expulsion. Because some jerk using a system, or a laptop, I guess, running Linux, had gotten past the firewall in the school and had stolen some passwords. So I came back the next day and told my principal, sorry, I don't want to get expelled. I'm not going to bring my computer into school and give a demo presentation. Fortunately, we knew the guy who ran the systems for the district, and we got that rule fixed, amended, but it just blew me away. I couldn't load programs on school PCs. I couldn't even run a Linux instance on the computers at school. You weren't allowed to do that. You had to use what they gave you. And you could not boot an alternative OS off of a USB. Even Stanford University. I took Latin online at Stanford for 2 years while I was in high school. That's part of the reason I was able to graduate early. And this notebook had to be dual boot so that I could attend class and do homework on trips, because all of the software necessary to attend class online and do my schoolwork was completely proprietary. And at home, I had to have two separate computers on my desk, a Microsoft machine for my Stanford work and my Debian machine for everything else. But I have a diploma now. I don't have to deal with, thank you. I don't have to deal with this kind of thing day to day anymore, but that doesn't mean the problem's gone away. All right, this is a very cluttered slide. If you feel you can read the text, go for it. I'm gonna go through it, so don't worry about it. So just to give you an idea, now that I've got a diploma, now that I don't have to deal with all this proprietary software day to day anymore, this is kind of an overview of the open source programs I use every day. OpenOffice is one that I use quite a lot. One of the big things that made OpenOffice a fantastic alternative to Microsoft Office for me was that there are no Clip-It. I hate Clip-It, and I am so grateful that the people who created OpenOffice decided that a talking paperclip was not necessary. And the functionality in OpenOffice is very comparable to Word, but for me, there's a much more comprehensive GUI. For things like word count, have you ever tried to find word count in Microsoft Office? It's not in a logical place, but in OpenOffice, it's just one or two menu drops down and you're good to go. I also use Impress for shiny slide decks like this one. And what I love about Impress is that it's not cluttered with millions of templates and effects. It's very easy to make clean and simple presentations. I use Evolution as my mail client. For somebody who maybe gets a total of 30 emails a day, using something like Evolution is a really good option. For those people who get thousands of emails a day, I understand it can be a real problem. I also use GIMP and Inkscape a lot more this year than I've ever used before, because I'm working on a lot of scholarships this year that require graphics, or I'm in illustration contests and t-shirt design contests and those sorts of things. So I've been using the GIMP and Inkscape in tandem for a lot of those scholarship applications. I use IceWeasel as my main browser. It replaces Internet Destroyer, Internet Explorer. Explorer doesn't really run correctly without added programs to increase functionality. I got that straight off of the Internet Explorer, how to use a website that's on the Microsoft server. It doesn't run correctly without added programs to increase functionality. IceWeasel doesn't need any help. And IceWeasel is significantly less susceptible to viruses and spyware. If a bug or a virus or even some really pernicious spyware gets in there somewhere, enough people are working on it all the time that the problem's gone in at least the same day, if not 30 minutes. I use Media Player a lot. I'm a teenager. I do like to listen to music and watch movies on my computer a lot. And Media Player seems to do the job, though right now it's not working, which is really frustrating. I used SynFig for a while when I was still doing animation stuff with open source. SynFig is a fantastic program. If any of you are doing animation, even if it's just claymation, SynFig is one of the best programs out there for doing open source animation at the moment. Yes, I do use FreeCell quite a lot, especially at conferences where the wireless is spotty. I also use Rockbox for the period of time that I still had an iPod. Because at home we have an insane amount of disk space, we always save audios in the FLAC format, uncompressed. That means we can recreate a damaged CD pretty easily, which we've had to do a couple times. And so with Rockbox, it was really simple. All I had to do was pick what I wanted on my iPod. I ran a script to convert the FLAC to open codec AUG, which is better quality and smaller files than MP3, by the way. And Rockbox made that very easy to do. The GUI was very comprehensive, and I had no problems using it when I still had an iPod. So, all of that said, in other words, in my experience, programs available to proprietary software users are complicated, one-size-fits-all programs that do a little of everything. See also Photoshop. Open source equivalents are not only free, but consistently easier to use and more customizable. This is really at the core of what I wanted to talk about today. This is why a lot of teenagers, a lot more than even just 5 years ago, are interested in this thing we call free software and open source, because you really can tailor it to what you want to do with software. So, at the end of all this, yeah, I'm tired of school systems using completely proprietary software, but what can I do? I'm only 17. In the school environment, I tried to be living proof that the common misconceptions are just that. It's amazing how many people's jaws drop when they realize that I speak at open source conferences. It doesn't compute with them, because they're expecting, and I hate to be this way, but it's true, they're expecting people with pocket protectors and unlaced white sneakers and khakis. And I'm not joking. In the public school system where I was, the whole idea that you being a girl, that you could do these things, it just didn't occur to a lot of people. But once I started talking to them, those misconceptions flew right out of the door. A lot of my friends are now educated about Linux because that was one of the things that they were interested in, because they had heard through the grapevine that I was doing stuff with it, and they had no idea what it was. They had no idea that somebody like me could be working on it and have fun. And so after a grand total of 5 minutes of conversation, those misconceptions just flew right out the window. So I tried to be living proof that the common misconceptions are just that. There's no substance to them. I also encouraged friends and teachers to educate themselves about free software. I even brought an Ubuntu Live Boot CD to school to give to my tech admin at my high school, and she looked at it and she said, Ubuntu? What is this? What, a boot CD? She had no idea what I was talking about. And I gave the CD to her, and she promised she'd look at it. I doubt she has. But I tried my best to encourage friends and teachers to even just educate themselves a little bit about free software. Because the more the free software movement grows, the more open source space gets bigger, the more relevant it becomes to everybody, not just people involved in software. As I am no longer in the public school system, I can't really change what OS the school supports. Fortunately, my college is very supportive of Linux and other free software. And one of the reasons that, especially in the US, public school systems, open source is not really a viable option is that these system administrators at the schools are so used to having a phone number to call when they have a problem. They're so used to having the professional tech support that proprietary software offers them. When they buy a suite of software, they're expecting to have a phone number if somebody could call if something goes wrong. And unfortunately, getting professional tech support is still easier for something like XP than free software like Debian in the US. It just doesn't fit their mental model of how software in their school system should work. And that's going to take a long time to change. So I try to continue to be a responsible free software citizen and encourage other teens to become involved. That's why I speak at conferences, because it's an easy thing to do. It's easy to get up and talk about something that you love. So to finish, I wanted to leave enough time for questions. I found a quote that really struck a chord with me when I was revising this presentation. The young, free to act on their initiative, can lead their elders in the direction of the unknown. The children, the young, must ask the questions that we would never think to ask. Why, thank you. So if you have a question, if you'd wait for the microphone to come around, that way everybody can hear what you have to say. Or did I just do a fantastic job?
I'd like to ask a question about the public school system. To what extent do you think the difficulty and the proprietary dominance there and the lack of openness to free and open software is due to the dominance of certain proprietary vendors that we could name? So, for example, when I was in secondary school, we had IBM PCs and compatible systems, we had Apple II computers, we had an old big mini computer that was running CPM in one of the laboratories, we had a laboratory of BBC microcomputers. They all had different operating systems. I don't remember anybody complaining about that, and they were all rather different, so that when you came out of secondary school, most people would have had exposure to several of those. They have some acquaintance with several different systems, and I have a suspicion that that equips people better than experience with only a limited range of proprietary applications. So I'm wondering to what extent you think this lack of diversity is a problem, a missed educational opportunity, attributable to certain monopolistic tendencies in the industry.
I would definitely have to agree with you. That is a problem that I saw more and more as I went through my high school. We only had one kind of computer, and they were all XP. There was no diversity at all, except in maybe the teacher's personal laptop. I think part of the problem, frankly, is for school systems, it's a whole lot easier and maybe even more economical or practical, I don't know, for the entire system to be running one OS, to be one kind of computer. And since so many students these days do have their own laptop, maybe it's expected that diversity is going to come from home. I'm not sure, but it's really unfortunate that a lot of my peers are so uneducated, not through their own fault, but just so uneducated about what else is out there. We don't even have any Apple computers in my school system. I mean, that would be even just a step better than having all the same system. Now, when I was in elementary school, we did have all sorts of different kinds of computers. We had Apple.
Section called Grounds for Immediate Expulsion. You know, at the top was, you know, bring a firearm to school. And,
drugs,
and, you know, being
alcohol.
Caught using, you know, narcotics on school grounds. And then there was a line that said, the use of Linux or any other Unix-like operating system on school premises. And I looked at
Let's
that.
Expel
I said,
everybody.
Where did that come from? So, you know, while Elizabeth went off to explain to her principal that she didn't want to be expelled and so she probably shouldn't bring her notebook in, I sent the guy who was the technology director for the district that I knew pretty well an email and said, what happened? And he went and dug into it and came back and said, oh, yeah, you know, some kid brought in a machine with a bunch of password scanning and you know, port mapping and so forth stuff on it. And they fixed this problem fairly quickly. But, you know, I was actually disappointed they fixed it so quickly because I had several layers of VP and SVP and executive VP folks at HP, all of whom had kids in the district who were looking forward to swooping in on a school board meeting and pontificating who didn't get a chance to be.
We were really upset that we deprived them of that opportunity because that would have been a fantastic show to watch. You know what? I seriously debated, but you know what? I was in seventh grade. This was the first talk I'd ever given. I was 13. Somebody wanted me to come to Australia to talk at a con. I wasn't going to screw it up. Are you kidding? All right. So I've been told that I only have a minute left. I will be here the entire rest of the week. If you want to come find me, just look for the guy in the tie-dye. I'll probably be somewhere nearby. And if you...
you have time to answer one more question if you want to.
Oh, fantastic. One more question. Go for it.
It occurs to me that we have an opportunity to shift the focus back to the curriculum because there seems to be a lot of talk in schools, at least from what I've seen, about we need to teach computers, we need to teach word processing so kids can write stuff, blah, blah, blah. But if we shift the focus to how does this achieve educational outcomes and, you know, how can we make the software actually relevant to teach these kids their ABCs or their mathematics or whatever, then we get the in terms of free software community, we get the upper ground because we can produce
Absolutely.
Software much more, that's much more relevant through the flexibility. And curriculums change from place to place.
Sure.
Curricula, rather. Yeah, you can't. It would be much more difficult for a proprietary software company to produce something that applies to all of that and all the
Absolutely.
Different languages and all the different cultures. It just can't be done. It's not economical.
Yeah, it really isn't, and that's what's so frustrating because I would love, in a perfect world, to see it work, but unfortunately, right now, it isn't feasible at all. When I gave this presentation in Japan, there was actually a guy in the audience who worked for the Idaho school system. And he had started a completely open source online high school, and he was really excited to see me. He had no idea I was going to be here, blah, blah, blah. We chatted, blah, 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 blah. Probably something important happened that I missed. But at the end of it, it struck me as another isolated case of open source being feasible and useful in a high school environment. And in a perfect world, would I love for everybody to be using Linux? Yes, because it's so much better. But in the real world, trying to create a movement of that magnitude even with a base of the open source community, which is already a global movement, trying to start a movement like that, there's going to be more resistance than I think one single group of... I know. I'm so hopeful. I know. Yes, but what about everybody in London? And what about everybody in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Sure.
That was really, really good.
Thank you.
You are amazing.
Thank you.
It's lunchtime for everybody now, and we'll be back here at 1:30. Yeah.
I'm organizing a kayaking trip this afternoon after the mini-conf. There's sunshine. I looked through there, and Woo! There is sunshine. So if you're interested, just come and see me and just follow along.